passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out, and when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game. And that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to triplecrownjewelry.com and lead the league in drip.
Welcome to another edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. It is May 13. We are down to just a couple weeks before Selection Monday, which means that we are fully into the stretch run here in college baseball, and we have a new top 25 over at baseballamerica.com, and we're going to break that down, and we're going to talk about that stretch run leading up to conference tournaments, which for the most part start next week. So to break down the new top 25 and that stretch run as we head into conference tournaments, we have Dave Serrano and Joe Healy here today. So welcome to the show, guys.
Thanks, Teddy. Glad to be back for another week, another exciting week leading into getting closer to postseason.
Yeah, best time of the year in college baseball. It's a whole lot of fun and ready to talk about it.
Awesome. So this weekend around the country, we had some big-time rivalry series, and we had not too many upsets in those rivalries, but there were a few shakeups to the top 25. Not at the top, though. UCLA remains number one, ninth straight week for the Bruins at number one. The top five completely stayed the same, so that's UCLA, Vanderbilt, Stanford, Arkansas, and then Mississippi State. We have two new teams in the top 25. They are Dallas Baptist and Fresno State. They're winning their conferences. DBU swept into first place in the Missouri Valley, and Fresno State all but clinched the Mountain West this weekend with a series win against second place San Diego State, and they'll look to finish up that regular season title this weekend. So those are your two new teams in the top 25. I mentioned we had some rivalries, and I was pretty excited about them a week ago. We had Mississippi State visiting Ole Miss. We had Stanford going across the bay to take on Cal. We had Bedlam with Oklahoma and Oklahoma State going at it, and Oregon playing Oregon State. And ultimately, all the ranked teams in those series won, but they were still some exciting games in those rivalries. And I want to especially talk about both Mississippi State's win and Oklahoma State's win, because in those two series, those two teams have kind of dominated the rivalry in recent years. Mississippi State went to Ole Miss, swept the Rebels in Oxford for the second straight time. I believe that's the first time in that rivalry's history Mississippi State has swept back-to-back series in Oxford. And now over the last 4 years, Mississippi State is 14-2 against Ole Miss. That 4 years, not coincidentally, spans Jake Mangum's career. So what do you guys make of Mississippi State's dominance both this weekend in a series that probably secured Mississippi State as a top eight overall seed. And over the last few years, I mean, this is a Mississippi State team that has endured a lot of changes in those 4 years, four different head coaches involved in that, a lot of different players coming in and out. You know, just what do you make of what the Bulldogs did this weekend and over the last few years there?
Teddy, and I think it's pretty remarkable when you look at it, especially coming in to this weekend. And I know it's been a stretch of a run on for Mississippi State, but this weekend especially, it was a big weekend for both teams. Both teams are pushing to get up into a top eight seed, a host site. And again, Mississippi State does what they've done over the last few years, and that's, you know, play great baseball and sweep. What I said last week was a team that I thought was really on the rise in Ole Miss, and they swept them going away. And the thing you said that was remarkable, it's been done by four different coaches. Jake Mangum has obviously had an impact on along with the other players that are in, but I think it's just an amazing run of the success they've had over Coach Bianco's team and the Ole Miss Rebels, which in all 4 years have had a good program, a very good team. And you know, sometimes in baseball, sometimes it becomes a mental thing. And obviously Mississippi State has the mental edge right now. I don't know if they have the physical edge completely. I think Ole Miss has really good players, but right now it's come down to mentally that Ole Miss is probably doubting whether they can beat Mississippi State, and Mississippi State goes into every series, whether it's home or away, against the Rebels, and thinks when they put their uniforms on, they're believing they're going to win, and they have come out on top. But I think it's a pretty remarkable run by the Bulldogs because of their success over them.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, this is the one that doesn't make a ton of sense, just because for the reasons that you guys laid out there. I mean, there's been so much chaos, maybe a strong word, but just so much going on in that Mississippi State program with the four head coaches and the way in which they changed coaches from Cannizzaro to Henderson as the interim. And, you know, there's not only that, but there's also been years where Ole Miss has had the more talented team. There's been years when Mississippi State's had the more talented team. There's been years when Mississippi State was super short on the mound. There's been years where they, like this year, where they're led by a couple of big arms in the rotation. There's, you know, been years where Ole Miss's offense is better than Mississippi State's offense. I mean, really, there's not a lot of linear progression in this rivalry in terms of one team necessarily being better than the other over any given period of time, and yet Mississippi State just continues to dominate it. And perhaps as time has gone on in these last 4 years, I think it is less of a surprising thing this year that Mississippi State pulled off what they did, and not just because this Mississippi State team is better than this Ole Miss team, all that is also true. I think what has come out of all that tumult they've had is that I think you've got a pretty tight-knit group who knows who they are and plays for each other because they had to, because there was so much up in the air about who was going to lead them. And the constant was the players and that team being together through all of that. And I think that is being expressed now in this team who is playing pretty well and has been through the ringer and is, you know, kind of knows not to get too up or down. And I'm not so surprised with the result this weekend because of that. But over the last 4 years, it's just kind of been incredible. I mean, between, you know, what they've been through and then, you know, 2 years ago, their pitching staff was, you know, kind of hung together by bubblegum and baling wire. And, you know, they still managed to get it done. So through all of that, they've been able to dominate the way it is one heck of a feat, even if maybe this year specifically wasn't necessarily the biggest surprise that they had that much success.
Yeah, I mean, this weekend especially was kind of backbreaking for Ole Miss. They really took an RPI hit. A week ago, we'd had them as a regional host, the last one in the field, and now this week, I don't think they're going to be projected as a host, and they have a tough series coming up at Tennessee to close out the SEC regular season, and they're just going to be trying to recapture some of that momentum. And I mean, this was a team that had only lost six games at home all season coming into the weekend, and Mississippi State cut right through the Rebels. And it's just kind of remarkable to see what they've been able to accomplish over the last 4 years. But right now, Mississippi State is playing probably as well as pretty much anyone in the country. And, they lead the nation with 42 wins now. And I mean, it's just been a rather impressive run, especially of late for Mississippi State. Really, since that Arkansas series, they've been going absolutely red hot, and they responded really well to that. So they're looking good. And then I also mentioned Oklahoma State there wins the Bedlam series. They did not sweep. They won the Friday game. Oklahoma came back on Saturday, and then Oklahoma State goes into Norman on Sunday. It's a traveling series. Starts in Tulsa, moves to Oklahoma State, and finished in Norman this year. And Oklahoma State goes into Norman and finishes the series win on Oklahoma's home turf, which I thought was especially impressive. And now the Cowboys are 24-7 against Oklahoma under Coach Josh Holliday. That stretches, I believe, it's 7 years. And, I mean, that's a rather impressive run as well. Oklahoma State has been the better program throughout that time. They've been to Omaha. Oklahoma hasn't, during that stretch. But, that's still traditionally a really tight rivalry. And it's kind of been anything but with Josh Holliday at the helm. And now, like Mississippi State, Oklahoma State this weekend really kind of went a long way to solidifying itself as a regional host. They're up to 30-17 overall and 12-9 in the Big 12 with a big series at home against Baylor coming up this weekend. And Oklahoma, meanwhile, is really staring at the wrong side of the bubble. They're down to 31-20, 9-12. In the Big 12, and so the Sooners now have some work to do, both in this final week and then maybe in Oklahoma City for the Big 12 tournament if they can't get it done this week at Texas. So the Cowboys capitalized on that momentum that they built a week ago with their sweep at Oregon State, and they're rolling. I mean, what do you guys make of what the Cowboys were able to accomplish this weekend?
I think they did what they had to do again, Teddy. I think coming off of last weekend, the big sweep out in Corvallis, I think they continued their momentum. They've got a stretch now coming up this weekend. They got a big series against Baylor. There's some games away from the conference championship outright and in the season championship, but they're playing for a possible regional host and they're playing good baseball at the right time. This is a big weekend for them, but I think they've put back-to-back big weekends. And going off that rivalry thing as you were talking, Teddy, I was thinking about, because we're talking about two that have been lopsided, but you look around the country and you kind of wonder where some of these rivalries of the evenness have gone. You go across the country to Oregon State and Oregon, and the Beavers have owned that for many years, whether it was Coach Casey or now Coach Bailey. They've owned the Ducks in that series. You go to down into the Florida State, Florida versus Miami, Florida versus Florida State. Florida's owned that one. Out in California, Cal State Fullerton, Long Beach. I know they're both having down years, but Cal State Fullerton has really taken over the reins of that rivalry. So it's kind of funny to see how lopsided some of these big rivalries around the country have been one-sided over the last few years.
Yeah, this rivalry with OU and Oklahoma State, at least in my estimation, makes a little more sense just from the standpoint of this series is always towards the end of the year. And it's my estimation, I don't have the data in front of me, so maybe this is wrong and one of you guys may tell me that, but it feels like one of the hallmarks of Oklahoma State under Josh Holliday is they typically kind of get going later in the year and play pretty well and run to the finish line. We've seen it in the past. I'm remembering the year a couple of years ago when they came in, I think it's Big 12 tournament as an 8 seed, end up winning the thing. Last year's not a great example. They faded a little bit down the stretch when they could have won the Big 12 regular season title, but that was a team that overachieved. So I guess you could make maybe a similar argument there, but so it's just not great timing for Oklahoma that they're catching Oklahoma State and Josh Holliday at that time of year, because it does feel like Oklahoma State kind of makes a habit out of finishing well. So that's certainly part of it here. And, this weekend was I described in the recap, in the top 25 recaps on Oklahoma State, talking about their win on Friday, that this was kind of a traditional Oklahoma State win. And I would call it the Oklahoma State starter pack in 2019. They get a complete game from Jensen Elliott and they get 3 solo home runs in the first inning. And that's going to kind of be Oklahoma State. I mean, Jensen Elliott, if they're going to stay on schedule in the Big 12 tournament, in a regional, if they get to a super regional, Omaha, what have you, it's going to be Jensen Elliott giving them that type of outing to start the weekend off, because while they have gotten some guys come around on their pitching staff and it's not maybe a situation where they're paper thin anymore, certainly their success in the mound is predicated on Jensen Elliott giving them at least giving them innings in that first game. And so I think we saw that again Friday, that they should have confidence that it's going to be like that moving forward. Oklahoma, by the way, you mentioned them kind of being on the bubble, and that is absolutely true. They finish off with Texas, which I guess in some respects is good news for them, just because, at least on paper, Texas is really struggling right now. That provides an opportunity for them, if they sweep, for example, to really kind of get back in that mix, maybe even if they win 2 or 3 to get back in that mix. But the other side of that coin is, you know, Texas right now is not in the Big 12 tournament, and it's a big ask because they really haven't been playing well, so there's not a lot of suggestion they could do this. But if Texas sweeps and everything else breaks right, Oklahoma might end up out of the Big 12 tournament altogether. They are not 100% safe right now. So now Kansas and Kansas State play each other. That's the other piece of that puzzle. So it doesn't all come down to the Texas OU series. But Oklahoma's in a situation where, you know, it's not just about getting into regional position, although that's the most important thing. It's also a little bit of self-preservation. If we even want to play in Oklahoma City, we've got to make sure we at least get one of these Texas games. And Texas, at least in theory, is going to have a decent amount of motivation, not just a rivalry series, but playing for their baseball lives, really and truly, this coming weekend.
Yeah, Oklahoma has not fared well the last couple weekends. They were swept by Texas Tech at home a week ago, and they are trending the wrong way, while Oklahoma State is very much trending the right way. Dave, you mentioned Oregon State and Oregon, and the Beavers last weekend were stunned at Goss by Oklahoma State. They would get right, winning the first two games there against the Ducks before Ryan Nelson kind of shut them down out of the bullpen in the series finale. But do you feel like that the Beavers were able to kind of get back on track this weekend facing Oregon?
Yeah, you know, hard to really say, because I obviously have a relationship with Coach Horton, but it was probably just at the right time, because I think going back to that confidence factor, I think they play with confidence against the Ducks. They've got a big weekend coming up this weekend against Stanford, with the conference title on the line in a three-team race. So, yeah, they did get back on track, and maybe they'll look back at the Oklahoma State weekend as just a bleep on the radar. But, you know, that was a big hit for them. It hit them from a national perspective, but this was good for them to get back on track this weekend, to win 2 out of 3 and going into a big, like I said, a big weekend series against Stanford and for both teams.
Joe, it's not technically a rivalry, I guess, between Virginia and Louisville, but they do play every year. It's the protected series for those teams in the ACC and their cross division. And Virginia got a big time series win beating Louisville, as the Cavs are now back in the NCAA tournament picture, and kind of in a big way. I put them a week ago as like the last team of the next four out in the projected field of 64, but it's looking a little more real now that they came up with that big time series win. I mean, just what do you make of that? And especially, what do you make of the fact that they were able to drop as many runs as they were on Louisville?
Yeah, that was the weird part. You know, I was going to, as you were kind of talking there, that was kind of my thought on that series, was that, but gosh, I, you know, this was not the way I would have expected this series to go down if you told me that Virginia wins it. I mean, even in the game they lost, they scored 7 runs and off of Reed Detmers. And that's just not an easy trick to pull off there. But 22 runs over the final two games. You know, I think maybe it's just a team that kind of saw an opportunity and took advantage of an opportunity. And the weekend prior, I mean, they won their opener against North Carolina, then the last two losses in that series were by 1 run. So really, it feels like they've been playing well for a little while now, at least those last couple weeks. And I think this is a team that saw that opportunity and has kind of run with it and realized they weren't dead. And they've got, you mentioned it, they really kind of have it all right there in front of them. They're 12-15 in the ACC. The RPI is at 47. They've got a midweek with VCU and then 3 on the road against in a rival in Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech, you know, towards the bottom of the ACC, not a ton to play for there, but it is a rivalry series, so you know it's not going to be a series where Virginia can come in and just walk all over them. But you really like the chances that you know, Virginia takes care of VCU, then wins 2 or 3 against Virginia Tech, and that would be an interesting case. I mean, they probably go into Durham thinking they have a little bit of work to do at 14-16 in the ACC, and their RPI, if they win 2 or 3, is probably going to be inside the top 45, pushing 40, because VT's RPI is 62, so that's perfectly fine. There's no real danger there. So if they take care of business the rest of the way, go 3-1 in these final four, the numbers are going to be there to where basically, if they don't just go into Durham and then and look pretty bad doing it and the bubble shrinks on them, outside of that, if they can take care of the rest of their business, I really like them to get in when it's all said and done, which is, you know, I mean, we talked offline a lot about, man, I just don't think it's going to happen for Virginia this year, as recently as, you know, after that North Carolina series, they lost 2 of 3. But now here they are, and it looks like they are, there's a very good chance they're going to make it happen after all.
Yeah, that's a young team that seems like they've kind of figured some things out late. And, you know, Mike Vassell was really good this weekend, and I was just looking at his numbers coming into the weekend, and they were not very good. And, you know, he's a freshman, a highly touted freshman, and, you know, we know what he's capable of. And it seems like he maybe has found something here late. And I don't think he's the only young who that has figured things out as the season has gone along. And that's part of what playing young players means, is that sometimes it takes a little bit longer, but the payoff is certainly big if you can get there. And it seems like Virginia is closing in on a bit of that payoff right now. Now, we mentioned that we had two new top 25 teams this week. One is Dallas Baptist. I mentioned that they swept their way into first place in the Missouri Valley. They had a great week going 4-0. They took care of business this weekend against Indiana State, which came to Dallas in first place in the Missouri Valley. And DBU really took care of business the first 2 days and then played a nice solid series finale to complete the sweep and to grab a hold of first place. They're tied with Illinois State. They have the tiebreaker, having already won their series against the Redbirds. And interestingly, DBU is now up to 24 in the RPI, and they finish out, or 25 in the RPI, excuse me, and they finish out with Southern Illinois on the road this weekend. And again, they're in first place already. So if they're probably going to have to win out, you know, sweep this series at Southern Illinois and then go win the Missouri Valley tournament. But if they do that, I think that's a team that might end up hosting. They're closing really hard here. And the RPI has kind of always been in their favor. They're 36-15. So you're talking about, if they do that, they're going to have 40 plus wins. They'd have a couple of titles. They would have a very nice road record, a very nice top 50 record. There'd be a lot going for DBU, but I think, just even if that doesn't happen, this is a very intriguing team. It's not the typical team from DBU that we've seen the last couple of years, in that they don't just mash. The last few teams, especially with Devlin Granberg and Derek Hall, have had some big time bats in the lineup. And DBU can hit home runs, don't get me wrong, but they're a little more athletic. They are running a lot more. Augie Isaacson, a transfer from NAIA, Friends University. He's a grad transfer. He's just brought a kind of a different dimension to that team. And they already had some speed with guys like Luke Bandy, and that Isaacson got added in has really helped them kind of develop that part of their game. And it's a very intriguing team, and they have a lot of older pitchers, especially guys like Martinson and MD Johnson there in the rotation. So it's a fun group. And I mean, this is a program that knows what it's doing. They've made regionals, I believe, 7 straight years, and they're rolling right now, and they're looking for their first Missouri Valley title since 2016. I've just been very impressed with DBU, especially been able to accomplish here this last week, going 4-0 against some pretty good competition.
Yeah, it's an interesting team, and I think the construction of it is more similar to, you kind of alluded to a little bit, Teddy. It kind of reminds me a little more of the construction of like the 2015-2016 Dallas Baptist versus 2017-2018. Those two teams, like you mentioned, were particularly offensive, and they had some guys on the mound, but, you know, the ERAs were up over 4, and they had some starters who would give you innings, but, you know, sometimes you wouldn't be sure that they'd be able to really give you a shutdown start. And this year, I think one of the big keys for them has been two guys you mentioned, and Jordan Martinson and MD Johnson have gone from being, kind of veteran innings eater guys to guys that really are giving you shutdown starts now. I mean, MD Johnson 8-2 with a 2.33 ERA. Jordan Martinson is 7-3 with a 2.91 ERA. And those are big leaps from where they were last year, when I think both had ERAs closer to 5 than 4. And they're still kind of figuring out the third spot in the rotation, but where it's also similar to some of those past DBU teams, I think back to like when Wes Johnson was on staff with them there, that it was just a staff full of a really deep staff full of guys who could get you out in a bunch of different situations. And that's kind of what I see here, where they've got a whole bunch of guys who've started a handful of games, you know, a whole bunch of guys who have been in a lot of different situations. And I think that kind of bodes well, especially when you get into a postseason situation where your pitching is unless you get incredibly lucky or you just have a really good weekend, your pitching is going to break down at some point. And then it becomes a matter of like, how deep can you go? How many guys do you have that you can throw out there? And I think this team is well suited to do that kind of thing with a couple of big horses at the front, but then like a lot of guys kind of on the back end that they feel like, okay, this guy, you know, we'll bring in a McGregor Hines just to throw a name out there, and okay, maybe he doesn't really have it, so let's turn it over to Burl Caraway. Let's see what he's got today. And I think that bodes really well for their success moving forward.
Burl Caraway is an absolute stud, and that is definitely a name to watch for next year in the draft if you're looking forward to that already. He's a lefty that throws in the mid-90s, and his numbers this year are kind of a joke. So he's a big-time piece. When you think about DBU, like Joe's saying, you think about those Wes Johnson teams and the big-time arms they had coming out of the bullpen. Burl Caraway is the latest one of that, and so that's a name to watch over the next year. Now, Dave, I wanted to ask you about Fresno State. That's a team that you were able to see early in the season when they played that series at Tennessee. They actually were one of the first teams to kind of get to Tennessee a little bit, and they're now in first place in the Mountain West. And they're coming off a big series win against San Diego State, a team that has been kind of the powerhouse in the Mountain West for, I don't know, the last 5-6 years, it feels like. And Fresno State now on the verge of upending them and getting back to the top of that conference. What stands out to you about this Fresno State team?
Well, the first thing that stands out to me, Teddy, is with the confidence of their head coach, Mike Batesole. They had started out slow when they were here in Knoxville and they were playing that series. Their record wasn't very good. I can't remember exactly what their record was, and they ended up losing 2 out of 3. But he was confident. He was real confident about his team. He said, "Dave, we've got a good team." He said, "I really like our pitching. They got to grow up some. We've got to get some innings for some guys." He liked his offense, the approach they had. Mike, most of Coach Batesole's teams have been more offensive than they have from the pitching standpoint, loved his coaching staff. He had nothing but positive things to say. And I was really kind of set back a little bit because they were struggling at the time. But everything he was talking about everything going on with his team and the program was in a positive way. And it's paying off for him now. He had kind of mentioned that, you know, they had some bad weather, you know, but I kind of look at a lot of people have bad weather at the start of the year. And he said they had just had a chance to find their groove as a team. They'd been rained out a lot of games and just had bad weather throughout the start of the season. And he had kind of said that was one of the reasons why he felt they hadn't hit their groove, but sure enough, he was right on about it. And I think that kind of goes to show, I mean, he wasn't down on his guys. He was positive. The glass was half full, and sure enough, it's paying off for them. And to me, they're a scary team. I mean, Coach Batesole's teams are usually tough. They're usually hard-nosed guys, and they're tough. And, you know, I don't know if they make another run like they did in that miracle year they won the national championship. But they will be a tough out in anyone's regional come postseason.
Yeah, they're looking for their first NCAA tournament appearance since 2012, and it looks very much like they're going to get that, assuming they take care of business here down the stretch. And I mean, I would guess they're probably headed to Stanford. And yeah, the Cardinal probably not super enthused that Fresno State's going to show up in their regional, if that is how it goes. Someone on the West Coast is going to get them, whether it's Stanford or Corvallis or maybe UCLA. But I would guess right now, I've been projecting them into the Stanford regional, and that could be a fun matchup there. As the Bulldogs get back into the NCAA tournament, or as they look to do that for the first time since 2012. I wanted to, as we go into this final week of the regular season for everyone, nearly everyone in the country outside of the Pac-12 and the Big West and the couple of conferences that are already into their tournaments, this is crunch time. This is you're down to just 1 weekend left. And so I wanted to kind of run through some of these conferences and get our thoughts on who we think is going to end up as the conference winner. So we're going to start in the ACC alphabetically. Louisville there leads Georgia Tech by 2 games. Miami by 2.5. Miami still has to finish a series against Wake Forest tonight. So that's for the overall conference lead. That Louisville is probably not going to blow that. They finish with Florida State. Georgia Tech finishes with Pitt. Miami with Duke. Do either of you guys see Louisville not winning the ACC?
I don't. I mean, I see Louisville holding on. I mean, I just think that 2 games is a lot over 1 weekend. It means that something has to go very wrong for Louisville, and then someone else has to really kind of jump on that. I just think 2 games at this point, and betting on Louisville to lose 2 series in a row seems like a sucker's bet there. So I'm going with the Cardinals.
And I likewise like the Cardinals too. I think Louisville's done it more than anyone else. Like, they had a little bit of a setback this weekend, but I think they finished the job this weekend.
So the more interesting ACC race then is the Coastal Division, where we have Georgia Tech just a half game up on Miami again with the Canes playing, and UNC just 1 game back. UNC has NC State again. Georgia Tech has Pitt at home, and Miami has Duke. That one is especially tight. If Miami can win tonight, Miami holds the tiebreaker on Georgia Tech. So that one could be very interesting. And Pitt has become very feisty of late. They just won a series against North Carolina, and they won a game at Florida State the week before. So I'm not going to get picks on that, because until we know what Miami is, I think that one is just too tight to call. But that is the ACC race to watch. It's not the overall race. Louisville holding a pretty commanding lead right now. But the ACC Coastal, if that may have some implications for the top eight. If Georgia Tech wins that, it strengthens their case. If they finish behind Miami, it might ding them a little bit. And the margins for that top eight seed, of course, are going to be pretty tight. So it may well be, you know, it would definitely behoove Georgia Tech to go out and do everything it can to win the division, I would think.
Something else to watch there, too, is Miami getting healthier. I thought I saw that McKendree and McMahon will both be back for that final series. That's kind of been the thing that we've been watching with Miami, and they've been able to deal well with those guys being out. So with them being back in the fold for next weekend, I think it just kind of strengthens them even more and makes that something else to watch, especially if Wake Forest or if they can, you know, overcome Wake Forest tonight and kind of even things up. That makes it really kind of an interesting thing to watch.
Georgia Tech may not be fully healthy. Obviously, Brent Herter is still out. Shavian Curry missed a start again at Duke. That's 2 in a row for him. And Danny Hall told me last night that they're considering him day-to-day, but they're kind of targeting the ACC tournament a little more than this weekend for his return. So they might be again without ace Shavian Curry against Pitt. Health this time of year, as important as anything else, really. So the Big 12, this is probably the race of the weekend. The Pac-12 is very interesting as well, but they have an extra week. Big 12 will be decided this week. Baylor leading Texas Tech by a half game. Baylor finishes at Oklahoma State. Texas Tech at home against TCU. Dave, do you think Baylor can hold off Texas Tech, or the Red Raiders too red hot right now?
Well, the Red Raiders are hot. You know, obviously Baylor's coming off a week of obviously finals and everything, and that's always been a concern of mine. When you take a week off right in the middle of the season, how your team's going to, does it keep its momentum? The Red Raiders are playing TCU, that is playing for their lives. Whether they have a chance or not, they've got to get some wins and go deep in the tournament to even have a chance. So that's always concerning. I kind of like Baylor to finish it off, but I think it's going to be a very interesting weekend in the Big 12. It's something that's going to be exciting to watch to see how it plays out. But obviously on paper, I think Texas Tech probably is the strongest of the teams, but they're going to have to do it on the field.
I'm actually going to go the other direction. I think it's Texas Tech here. It's just a tough ask for Baylor to go on the road to win that series against Oklahoma State, because you have a lot of confidence that Texas Tech is going to win their series with TCU, even with TCU playing better baseball of late. And then so on the flip side of that, that means Baylor really needs to take care of business against the Cowboys, and that just seems like a tough thing for them to pull off.
Yeah, the way Oklahoma State's playing right now has me scared, but I said like 2 weeks ago that I thought Baylor had won it, so I'm going to stick to that, and we'll see. But I am – I that's – The way Texas Tech is playing right now has made that race, very tight going into the final weekend, and it's going to come down to the final day, just like it did last year, and it's going to be very interesting to see. Now, in the Big Ten, we have Michigan, which just lost its series to Indiana, but still leads the Hoosiers by a game and a half. There's a whole mess of teams 2.5 games back, and if any one of them wins, something will have gone very haywire with both Michigan and the Hoosiers, so we're going to focus on Indiana and Michigan here. Michigan finishes at Nebraska, Indiana at home against Rutgers. Joe, who do you got in the Big Ten?
I'm going to go Michigan here. That's a tough finish at Nebraska. Nebraska coming off a big series winning against Arizona State, obviously. But 1.5 is a big margin to begin with. And then also, I mean, you have in your mind Rutgers, but this is not your father's Rutgers. I mean, Rutgers has played pretty well this season in the Big Ten, and they've got a lot to play for. They're one of roughly, 60,000 teams that have a chance to be in the Big Ten tournament this year. The standings, watching some of the games on BTN yesterday, they'd show the standings every so often, and there's really, I think Penn State might be the only team mathematically eliminated from being in the Big Ten tournament with 3 games left. That's pretty incredible. And so there's just a lot to play for out there, and Rutgers is one of those teams right in the mix, 9-12 in the Big Ten. So I don't think Indiana is necessarily going to get it's not going to be the easiest time for Indiana to pull off that series win. So if you're going to tell me Rutgers is going to give them a pretty good series, I believe you. And, Michigan taking care of business against Nebraska, which I think they will, would be enough for them to pull it off.
I agree. I'm also for Michigan in this. I believe they'll pull it off. But I also agree it's going to be very tough against a Nebraska team that seems to be playing better baseball. From my viewpoint right now, and they're probably too far out of it, probably the best team, the team that's playing the best right now in the conference is Illinois. But I think Michigan ends up coming out on top in this.
Yeah, I just don't see Michigan getting swept here. And I think if Indiana wanted to win this, they had their chance yesterday when they had an extra innings game with the chance to sweep the series in Ann Arbor, and that chance slipped through them. And I think that ultimately is going to be too much for them to overcome this weekend. But again, Joe mentioned it. Rutgers pitches very well, and that's not a series that's just like an automatic sweep by any means, especially with what the Knights have on the table in front of them, trying to make it to the Big Ten tournament for the first time, I believe, ever in the conference. So it's a big weekend there in the Big Ten. Now, the Pac-12, they do have 2 weekends left. So when we do this, we have to keep in mind that they all still have 6 games left. But we have a 3-way tie, UCLA, Stanford, and Oregon State. UCLA has already beaten Stanford and Oregon State, so it owns the tiebreakers. It finishes with Washington and then at Oregon. Stanford gets Oregon State at home this weekend in what might be the series of the weekend, and then goes to Arizona State. Oregon State at Stanford, and then home to USC. UCLA, clearly, we think, is the best team on the board here. Can the Bruins finish the job and go win the Pac-12?
Well, I think, just looking at that, I think they probably have the easiest slate, and I'm not saying nothing's easy, but out of the next 2 weeks of who they play, I think Stanford has the toughest. Going to Arizona State and then playing the Beavers, I think they've got the toughest of the three. I can't even imagine that offensive numbers are going to come out at, especially this time of year at Arizona State with the heat, with those two offensive clubs. It's going to be a battle, but I like the Bruins in this. I just think with the tiebreakers, a big deal. Teddy, as you mentioned, they've already got the tiebreaker. And I think with the final 2 weeks, they have the easier road to finish this thing off, but it's a great battle out there. It's 3 very good teams, 3 very deserving teams, and it's going to be exciting. They don't have a conference tournament, but their last 2 weekends are almost like a conference tournament the way it's set up right now.
Yeah, I feel like the Pac-12 finish a lot of times ends up getting kind of short shrift just because they play their final series when everyone else is playing conference tournaments, and that kind of gets overshadowed because we're all kind of paying attention to conference tournaments typically. I remember the year that Utah won it, that was a big series for them to get into a regional, and it felt like it, kind of went a little bit under the radar, even though it was getting a good amount of attention, but it was just because, when you put it up against every other conference tournament out there, it's Just kind of tough. But I'm with Dave in that I think UCLA is the team here, and I think the path is important. They've got Washington, which is a tough series, but they've got them at home, and they finish off with Oregon. And I hate to always say a team has nothing to play for, because it kind of discounts intrinsic motivation, that like these players don't want to go out there and embarrass themselves or lose games or make outs or give up runs, what have you. But with that said, I mean, Oregon's a team that has, fallen off of late. It looks very likely that by that point they are going to be out of the running to get into a regional, barring just a torrid comeback in their season. So I think that path for UCLA ends up making a difference when you combine, they're our number one team. We really believe in the talent, obviously. The path is favorable, and they do have those tiebreakers. I just think that's a little too much evidence for me to feel altogether comfortable going with either Stanford or Oregon State.
Yeah, I feel like UCLA probably finishes this out with 5-1, and they probably win it going away if they do that. So they only just got into this tie. They had been lagging behind Stanford and Oregon State the last few weeks here. With the sweep this weekend at Washington State, they were able to move into the three-way tie. And the way they finish is, as you guys said, it's the easiest path. So the way they're playing, the way they have this set up for them, and the tiebreakers, it feels like the Bruins will go out and get that Pac-12 title. So in the SEC, Vanderbilt leads Arkansas by one game. Georgia and Mississippi State are two games back. Vanderbilt finishes with Kentucky. Arkansas is at A&M. Georgia has Bama. Mississippi State has South Carolina. Felt like Vanderbilt was going to clinch this. Like, we could see it coming for a little while. It feels like that's going to happen. But Kentucky is feisty, and they don't get swept that often. And Zach Thompson is a big part of why. So do you guys think that there's any chance that one of these other teams is able to catch Vanderbilt?
I don't think so. I agree with you. Kentucky is feisty, and it's especially when you have to face Zach Thompson one time in the weekend. But I think that the game lead by Vandy right now is huge. I think that's going to be a great series between Arkansas and A&M. But, as you're talking about this, there three of those teams in my mind, no disrespect to Georgia, because I think they're a very good team. But when you're talking Vandy, Arkansas, Mississippi State, you're talking about three teams that are playing as good as anybody in the country. I mean, we've talked a lot about UCLA and their consistency, but those three teams are playing at a high level right now. But I think with the game lead, who they've got, and who Arkansas has, I think Vandy ends up on top when it's all said and done, heading into the tournament.
Yeah, I think that's right, for all the reasons you say. What's interesting, though, like, because Arkansas is playing so well, Arkansas going to A&M, like, I like their chances to win that series. A&M's offense is not one. You know, Doxakis has to be, Doxakis and Lacey traditionally have had to be pretty close to perfect a lot of times for A&M to kind of pull out some of these low-scoring wins. A&M's not an offense that if they get behind is really well equipped to be able to kind of mount some of these comebacks. So Arkansas feels like a decent matchup for A&M, but you're kind of, in essence, even if Zach Thompson gets Vandy and Kentucky takes that game, you're really asking for Arkansas to sweep, because Vandy has the tiebreaker with Arkansas, and asking Arkansas to sweep at A&M, I don't know about that. So it just seems like a tough ask. If it was in Fayetteville, now I think we might be talking. But I think I am going to circle back and go with Vandy here. I like them to win at least two or three in a worst case scenario. And I think Arkansas probably wins that series too. So kind of status quo, Arkansas ends up one game up on the Hogs.
Yeah, that feels right. The tiebreaker is big there. The Vanderbilt winning that series in Nashville is probably going to loom large. Our bonus SEC, last team in the SEC tournament, we have Kentucky, South Carolina, Alabama are all tied going into the final weekend. I have a feeling the tiebreakers may very well come into this, and it's kind of convoluted if it happens. But if Vanderbilt wins the SEC and Kentucky wins one game this weekend, presumably with Zach Thompson on the mound, they would hold the tiebreaker, because Vanderbilt has already swept both South Carolina and Alabama. So with that in mind, who gets the last spot that 12th spot in the SEC tournament, Kentucky, Bama, or South Carolina? Dave, who do you think?
Well, if you brought up the tiebreakers, I was aware of that, but I didn't know what those teams, I didn't have it in front of me, what those teams had done, not knowing Kentucky was playing this weekend. My gut instinct tells me Alabama. I don't know why. I just have a feeling. I think Brad Bohannon's done a good job with that club this year. They weren't expected to do much, and they're a young team. My pick is Alabama. No reason why. I think Kentucky has the advantage. Like you said, they win one game, and the other teams win one game, they're in. So I think they have the advantage. But I just feel, going off of what I just said a few minutes ago, I think Alabama is playing a very good team in Georgia, but Kentucky and South Carolina are playing two giants, as I talked about, in Mississippi State and Vanderbilt. Two of the three that I talked about are just playing tremendous baseball, along with Arkansas. So my gut tells me Alabama gets through this and ends up being the 12th seed.
Yeah, that's a good choice there. They bring up some interesting points, and I kind of had the same thought on Alabama too. In large part because, they played A&M really well this past weekend. I mean, a couple one-run losses, they very easily could have won that series, and I'm sure they're disappointed not to have. But I'm going to circle back and go with Kentucky, because I'm going to boil it down to this. What is the single best thing about any three of these teams? And I think the answer is Zach Thompson. Now, we're putting a lot on that young man. We sat here and talked about that being the single reason why we think they get a game, and now they're, in turn get into the SEC tournament. But that guy's really, really good. And even against a Vanderbilt offense, if he comes out dealing, there's just not a lot you can do. And I think I have more confidence in that single thing with Kentucky than I do about anything else. And Alabama has been a little bit frisky of late. So, and Dave's point is good too, in that Georgia is very, very good, but Georgia is not Vanderbilt or Mississippi State. So especially with, they've been without Emerson Hancock. They've dealt with some of those injury issues. So they're maybe a little bit a compromised version of a very good Georgia team. But, it's tough sledding for all three of those teams. But let's go with Kentucky. Let's go with the best pitcher on the board, and that's Zach Thompson.
I really want to talk myself into Bama. And I can do that by, saying that Georgia has the least to play for of any of these teams. Vanderbilt's playing for a number one overall seed. Mississippi State wants to finish as strong as they can and lock up that top eight overall seed. And I suppose Georgia, you can say the same thing of, but I feel like South Carolina is the easiest path in this. They have not been as frisky as either Kentucky or Bama has been lately, and I would love to see Bama get in just from a I want to see what Hoover looks like on Tuesday with Alabama playing. They're going to bring way more fans to Hoover Met than Kentucky will for a Tuesday game. So, for all of those reasons, it would be great if Alabama finds a way to pull this off. But it is hard to go against the idea that if Alabama can't beat Georgia in a series, that all Kentucky has to do is win the one game. They just have to match whatever Bama does this weekend. And so that puts Bama in a tougher spot. And it really means that they kind of have to win that series. So I guess I'm going to go with Kentucky, but if it is Bama, I think that would be a lot of fun, especially that Tuesday night in Hoover would be a little more raucous, which is a good time.
Can I bring up one kind of funny scenario that could happen? Zach Thompson pitched last Sunday for Kentucky. So the earliest I would guess that he will go with the Thursday, Friday, Saturday series in the SEC will be Saturday, because that'll still be one day earlier than his normal rotation. If for some chance Kentucky wins a game early in the series Thursday or Friday, and the other teams had not won a game going into the final day, Zach Thompson probably will not pitch Saturday. And guess what? The number five seed in the SEC tournament is going to have to face Zach Thompson in game one when they play Kentucky in Hoover. That could happen if the scenario plays out like that.
I also would be okay with that scenario, because that would be a fun treat on Tuesday at the SEC tournament for all the scouts that are there. I don't think the number five seed would be very excited about that potentially, but that would be something. And I mean, there's always something at the SEC tournament. That would not be the first time such a thing was done. I remember Georgia holding Robert Tyler a couple of years ago as they were trying to make a run at the SEC tournament to get into regionals. So we will see how that one plays out. And we got one more conference here. It is Joe's favorite conference. We got Conference USA, FAU, Southern Miss. They are tied. FAU has Middle Tennessee. Southern Miss has UAB. Joe, who is your Conference USA champion?
Well, I guess I can't just come here and do a shoulder shrug, I guess. I mean, that's kind of what we're left with, honestly. I mean, we've talked about this a little in our top 25 discussions where it feels like the team leading Conference USA should be ranked. I mean, traditionally that has been the case. Now you have to earn it, and that's kind of been the problem. And it's not just been that these teams have been bad. I mean, 19-8 is not anything to sneeze at in terms of a conference record in a competitive conference like that. But it's that the series losses have been kind of spaced out to where, like, just when you start to feel pretty confident, like, okay, Southern Miss is going to run away with this league, and it felt like that. But then, you know, they've lost two series in a row now. You know, FAU and then Rice, which was the more surprising one. Give me FAU. You know, they're a little bit hotter right now. I think they were really kind of buoyed. You know, I had the chance to talk to John McCormick when they were at Western Kentucky, and his team was very, I mean, he's one of the coaches who will kind of just tell you how he feels. And at the time he was like, look, we know where we're at. I mean, we've got to hustle. We're not going to get into the postseason if we don't hustle here. And I think it's safe to say they've been hustling. I mean, it started with, you know, a win over Florida, but they've taken care of their midweek games. They've won series against Southern Miss and now UTSA. So give me the Owls. It feels like they're maybe playing better baseball at the right time of year, where Southern Miss just, you know, I don't want to be overdramatic about it, but it does feel like Southern Miss just has had a little trouble this season really kind of getting on track. And some of it's been, you know, they had injury issues. They didn't get quite what they expected from Matt Wallner, particularly on the mound. They've had a little bit of trouble finding offensive pieces to fit around some of their tentpole guys like Wallner and Hunter Slater, guys like that. So FAU just inspires a little more confidence. But again, I mean, they're both playing teams that are towards the bottom of the standings. They're both playing the series at home. But FAU, again, to talk about tiebreakers, FAU has that tiebreaker. So if you're going to put them one game ahead and basically bet on one of these teams losing, you know, having to lose a series to give that, or for FAU to not win it, then let's go with the Owls.
And I agree. I go FAU too. I think obviously the tiebreaker again has a lot to do with it. I just feel that Southern Miss has a little bit more of a challenge with UAB than maybe FAU does with MTSU. And I like the Owls in this one also.
The Golden Eagles are going for three straight Conference USA titles, but I think that FAU, I'm with you guys, I think they break it and they win their second Conference USA title, first since 2016. They've definitely been the hotter team down the stretch, and it feels like they can finish it off here with what would be a fantastic few weeks stretch here, and you know, definitely secure. They're already looking very good for the tournament, but that would very much secure the regional bid for FAU, I think. So we'll be monitoring all of that and more. There's also a de facto Ohio Valley Conference championship series this weekend between Austin Peay and Jacksonville State. So plenty to watch around the country this week. And we will certainly be doing that. And you can follow along over at baseballamerica.com. Now is when we have reached the shout-outs portion, where we mention players or programs that we haven't really gone to but are worthy of mention, what they did over the last week. Dave, why don't you start us off? What do you have this week?
Well, I'm going to go out. I'm not going to be Joe this week, because Joe always has a very interesting concept to his shout-outs. But I'm going to go way outside the box, and I'm probably going to be accused of being a little sentimental. But as we're getting closer to the end of the season, last night I had the opportunity to go speak at the University of Cumberland's in Williamsburg, Kentucky. They're opening up the regional of the NAIA run to their World Series. And I got to speak at the University of Cumberland's for Coach Brad Shelton's team and the other teams in the bracket, Indiana Tech, Lion of Arkansas, Mobile, Alabama, and Baker of Kansas. And it made me start to think last night on my way home as we were doing our talk, is that we're invested in Division I baseball. That's what we do at Baseball America, but we cover other sports too. But Division II, Division III, and NAIA are all having their playoffs starting up too. And I want to congratulate all the teams that have had a successful year. I want to wish them all the best as they go into their postseason, and hopefully they all have a chance to play for a national championship at their respective divisions. But it was a pleasure to speak last night at University of Cumberland. It was a beautiful campus. I've driven by it a lot of times, right off of I-75. But Coach Shelton's done a great job there, and I wish them and everyone in that bracket nothing but the best. And again, getting a little sentimental, we talk a lot about top 25, regional host, who's getting in. But I want to say congratulations to something that's very important, and that's all the graduates this past week, or graduates that will be coming up this week, or maybe on a quarter system into June. Being a college athlete is tough enough in itself with the time restraints and the time management, and to see many of these young men and young ladies in the women's sports that walk across and get their degree is very important, the most important thing. And I want to congratulate every single one of them that have finished the job and not only have competed at a high level on the field, but have competed in the classroom and have done something that'll be wonderful for the rest of their lives. And on that note, I want to especially shout out to Will Neely, right-handed senior pitcher at the University of Tennessee. Obviously was a member of the team when I was part of the coaching staff there. And Will, 4 years ago when he came on campus, my biggest fear about Will wasn't if he was going to help the program on the field, is if he was going to be able to get through school, because school just didn't come easy to Will. Well, 4 years later, Will graduated on Saturday. And I want to give a huge shout out to Will Neely. Not only during his 4 years did he have to grind in the classroom, but unfortunately, he lost his mom, Janetta, 2 years ago when I was still his coach to cancer. So not only did he have to struggle with his school not coming easy, but he lost his mom during the process. And I want to say congratulations, Will. And just like I told you, I'd be there when you got through it. I'm telling you right now, I'm very proud of you.
A lot of guys grinding out there. That's a fantastic story. Thank you, Dave. And congratulations to Will for finishing that up. The spring. Joe, what do you got for us?
First off, thanks to Dave for acknowledging my shout outs as performance art. That's what I try to bring here, is a performance aspect to them. You mentioned Augie Isaacson, pardon me, from Dallas Baptist, and it reminds me that he went to a Friends University. You know, you mentioned Friends University, which has to be, I remember the first time I saw that, I was like, what is that? And then I looked at it. It's just kind of one of the most uniquely named colleges I think I could think of in the United States. And I live not too far from Washington University in St. Louis. So I know a little something about D3 colleges with unique naming conventions. So
I'm a proud owner of a WashU sweatshirt that I don't wear as much as I used to when I started at Baseball America. But shout out WashU.
Yeah, great school. Really good. I mean, it's a kind of a Ivy League level education in St. Louis, really sought after school. And so fantastic school. But Friends University and Washington University in St. Louis, two uniquely named smaller colleges. A baseball shout out to Zach Green. There hasn't been a ton of attention paid to South Alabama this year. They started off the season with a pretty big series against Clemson. They ended up losing that series and kind of went off the radar. And the Sun Belt's been so topsy-turvy this year, and more on that in a second. But Zach Green has just been killing it out of the bullpen for the Jaguars. He's appeared 25 times. He's got 44 innings. His ERA is 0.61, 13 saves on the year. The most impressive number, though, 63 strikeouts and 4 walks in those 44 innings, holding opponents to a 1.73 batting average against. The second part of that, though, is that South Al is playing a little bit better these days. Feels like they're kind of sprinting through the finish line. He's been a big part of that success. He being Zach Green has been a big part of that success. Ethan Wilson, just a huge bat in the middle of the lineup, 17 home runs on the year. And in a year when the Sun Belt has been, I use the word topsy-turvy. I mean, there's been a lot of parity, you could put it that way. Texas State is winning the league, and they are, at the season of today, probably would be an at-large team, even though their RPI is slipping a little bit. It feels like it's really anybody's ballgame in the Sun Belt tournament. And, why not South Alabama? I mean, you've got an arm like that. They're playing well. They've got some offensive pieces to kind of work around. So maybe this is one of those years where we don't see a team like this coming, and they kind of put it all together at the right time, because it seems like a tough bet to pick any one of the teams in the Sun Belt tournament. It really feels like anybody's ball game in Mobile.
Yeah, that's an interesting team. I happened into them in Hattiesburg about a month ago, and they've got some intriguing pieces, and they've definitely gotten a lot hotter over the last month, I would say. And yeah, like you said, Sun Belt wide open. So why not South Al? Because they are playing at a pretty nice level right now, and that league is pretty wide open. I wanted to shout out John Baker and Lucas Jaksich, two pitchers at Ball State. They combined to throw a no-hitter in the first game of a doubleheader Saturday against Ohio. I was not aware of this. I thought I spent enough time looking at Ball State media guides during my college career that I would have known this, but it was the first 9-inning no-hitter in program history. So congratulations to John Baker and Lucas Jaksich there at Ball State. I also want to mention East Carolina, which on Friday clinched the American regular season title. That's been a long time coming. They did it with five games to play, so obviously they've been absolutely dominating that conference, and they'll go in now to the final weekend with a 6.5 game lead on Cincinnati and Tulane, who are tied for second place. It's the first time ECU has won a regular season title since they won Conference USA in 2009, and I know this is definitely something that was high on the goal list for the Pirates and for Coach Cliff Godwin this year, and so they've checked that one off, and now they're rolling towards trying to be a top eight national seed, and we'll see if they're able to get that done here over the next couple weeks before Selection Monday, but East Carolina having a special season there, and I've just been thoroughly dominant in the American. And I also want to mention Samford, which clinched the SoCon title on Sunday night, finishing off a sweep against Western Carolina. First regular season conference title for Samford since 2006, when it was in the Ohio Valley. They go into the final weekend of the regular season, four-game lead on Mercer and UNC Greensboro, which combined to win the last four conference titles. So Samford has upset the order a little bit there on Mercer and UNCG. And the Bulldogs last year went out and won the SoCon tournament and then made some noise in the Tallahassee Regional. So we'll see if they're able to do that again. That's an intriguing team that's playing really well and is probably going to win 40 games this year. So great job by the Bulldogs and Casey Dunn down there at Samford. That brings us to the end of this week's Baseball America College podcast. The fun does not stop here, though. You can go over to baseballamerica.com. We'll have plenty of content there throughout the week. You can check out the full top 25 there now, as well as my off the bat column. Rounding up the weekend in college baseball, we'll have a new projected field of 64 on Wednesday, and then we'll roll right into the weekend content. It's a short week for a lot of teams, with them starting on Thursday before conference tournaments get going here in a week. So make sure to check all of that out over at baseballamerica.com. Make sure you are subscribed to the podcast. And if you have the time and the desire to give us 5 stars, it would be great if you could rate and review us. It's a great way to help other people find the podcast. And you can follow us on Twitter, where we will have more college baseball thoughts at all times of night, especially if you follow me. I am at Ted Cahill. Dave is at Dave Serrano 11. And Joe is at Joe_on_sports. We will be back here next week for another edition of the Baseball America College podcast. Until then, thanks to Joe, thanks to Dave, and thank you for listening.